Catch the NBA playoffs on Sling TV, the most flexible live TV streaming service, putting consumers in control to watch games their way with flexible subscriptions. Want to catch one game or a full series on ESPN? Grab a 1, 3, or 7-day pass. If you want to catch as many games as possible, get a monthly subscription with our ABC, NBC, and ESPN combo package. Either way, Sling lets you watch the playoffs your way with no long-term contracts. Learn more at sling.com. This year, experience the NHL playoffs your way. Want to watch a single? Do or die Game 7, a full week of heavy-hitting back-and-forth series. Then check out Sling's 1, 3, and 7-day passes. Watch the Chase for the Cup on ESPN and TNT, starting as low as $4.99. No long-term contracts or overpaying. Just live hockey at home or when you want it. Sling lets you do that. Visit sling.com to learn more.
Morning. You all right? I hope you are bright-eyed and bushy-tailed, rocking and rolling for the day ahead. You know, wakey-wakey, eggs and bakey, all that good stuff. The day's half over. Come on, guys. Come on, guys. Get with it. All right. It's just ticked 8 past 8 in the AM British Summer Time. On Thursday, the 7th of May in the year of our Lord, 2026. It's Election Day. Thanks for joining me. You're the glorious band, the chosen few, my band of brothers and sisters. You don't need to be told who you are. As always, I'm joined by my producer, Little Harry. How are you this morning? Good, sir.
Morning. Yeah, I'm all good.
The disembodied voice of Little Harry. Coming out of the heavens. Okay. So, yeah, it's Election Day. Something a tiny bit different then today. Because if you were so inclined, if you went on the BBC website or a fair few different websites like Sky News that show the front pages, you will find, I don't really have them. In fact, here's the web page, same web page we use nearly every morning. And it's just got a picture of that virus boat. Remember me telling you yesterday about that cruise boat where 3 people have died of like some rat virus thing? It's just got a picture of that. It tells you cruise ship rat virus and deal or will bomb you to hell, says the Donald. And beyond that, nothing. Because in Britain, we've got Ofcom, haven't we? I believe it will all be because of Ofcom. Maybe even laws beyond Ofcom about it. But on the actual day of election, the BBC at least, can't show sort of partisan political support. It's lip service, isn't it? The rest of the time, they're entirely partisan, pretending that they're not. But of course they are. Right? They'll have on actual communists, but not have someone like Tommy Robinson or Carl Benjamin or anything. Massively, massively left-leaning, just pretending to be impartial when they're absolutely not. However, on election day, if the front pages of the newspaper says something just explicitly party political, you know, like, vote Lib Dem today, guys, they can't show it or don't show it. So, all right, with that being said, I bought a whole bunch of papers this morning. Look at that. Physically bought them with real money. So we go through it that way because lotusseaters.com, we're just on the internet, right? So we can talk about it. No blue-haired Karen psycho at Ofcom can tell me not to show you what the front pages say. For now. Unless the goddamn commie government gets its way and completely regulates the internet. All right. Should we just have a look then? Some of them are sort of political, many of them, but not all of them. Should we start then? The Times. Should go to the other... Here we go, look. We've got the other camera set up for you and everything. How about that? No expense spared at the Lotus Eaters. Right, the Times, the Venerable Times. There's a picture of Catherine Middleton, the Princess of Wales, looking radiant as always. And the Donald says, deal or we'll bomb you to hell. Again, said that again. Apparently there might be a deal in the offing. Oh look, David Attenborough has reached 100. Still going at 100. PM seeks to stamp his authority by backing closer ties with EU. some people on the left of his party want that. Not really anyone else. The majority of the country, if Brexit is to go, anything to go by, don't want that. There you go, that's what he's doing. It also says, Polanski faces fresh scrutiny over tax after laundry claim. Or something to, they're going for, a lot of the papers in the news organs today are gunning for the Greens. I mean, trying to criticise them and take them down by that. Loads of different things about Zach Polanski today. One of the things, I think that's, I don't know about the laundry claim, but the tax thing. Apparently, he lives on a boat, some sort of canal boat, longboat thing, or some of the time he does, which means you don't have to pay much council tax or any council tax. If it's not your permanent residence, you do, but if you live on it sometimes, you don't. Something like that. I don't even know all the details. I've never lived on a boat or a longboat. I've got no intention of ever doing so, so I don't know all the rules about that. But some are saying, I don't even know if it's true, but some are saying he's got dodgy council tax questions to answer. Not paying it. Classic. I mean, he's a scumbag, isn't he? He's a scumbag who'll do and say anything that he thinks in his interest at any given moment. So that's exactly the sort of behaviour I would expect, to be perfectly honest. Just a total scumbag at every possible turn. All right, the eye paper. Next one up, I decided would be the eye paper. Starmer set to signal that UK is on path to a softer Brexit. Brilliant. Nobody wants that, other than a few socialists in Labour. The front of it says, Cabinet discussions now underway about a closer future relationship with the EU, the Eye paper understands. Keir Starmer is poised to make a major speech on the EU within weeks. He might not be PM within weeks. Okay. This is like, it might be, the last gasp of his time in power. And this is what he's doing with it. What a filthy wretch. Okay, make a big EU speech within weeks and expected to explain the compromises Britain would need to make in order to deepen access to the single market. We don't need to compromise with them. We don't need to. That's what it's all about. That's what the whole thing is about. That we were done compromising. We were done just endlessly bending over, doing as we're told by people we don't get to vote for. Endlessly giving them money that we see no return for, other than a flood of more people. Well, it's mad. Okay. Big, expensive, ambitious conversations. That's a quote. Big, expensive, ambitious conversations on a new relationship are taking place at heart of UK government, reveal cabinet source. And just completely undermining the will of the people at the Brexit referendum I'm talking about there. Completely. They never wanted it. The Tories never wanted it. Of course, Labour. Of course. Starmer will stick to his, quote, red lines, quote. Red lines that weren't in his manifesto. He never made any promises about them on the run-up to the last general election. Suddenly he's got loads of red lines that are important. Filth. He's got red lines that UK will not rejoin single market or customs union or return to free movement of people. So they're those types of red lines. Fair enough. Don't believe him anyway. He'd just give everything away. I'm sure he would. If he wants to, proactively wants to give away the Chagos Islands for no apparent reason other than it undermines us. Of course he'd concede almost anything to the EU, I would have thought. Some allies want trade boost and a plan to excite Labour voters. Right, so that is the point, isn't it? Is to try and excite the left. Left-leaning Labour voters. Forget about what's in the national interest. That's the other thing he kept saying when he was at, where was it, in Armenia or somewhere the other day, in that EU summit. He kept saying, without giving any real detail of what he meant, just kept saying, it's in the national interest to have closer ties to the EU. It's in the national interest. It's in the national interest. Just kept banging that drum. Not saying how it is, but it's obviously not, is it? It's just to appeal to the left of Labour within the party and potential voters. That's going to, even though it's at odds with what the country wants and our interests. It's traitorous, isn't it? It's Seditious. The leader of your government is seditious. Crazy, isn't it? And the final little thing says, but business secretary Peter Kyle tells the Eye paper, quote, Brexiteers blamed every problem on the EU. We should not fall into the same trap and think all our problems will be solved by rejoining the EU. Fair point, right? As most Brexiteers didn't think that blamed every problem on the EU. That's the other thing Ramonas always go on. They think that Brexiteers thought that it was a cover-all win. Of course not. It's just one of the many, many problems the country faces. And that's rich, isn't it? Where they think, Remainers, that every single problem, particularly economic, that has happened since then is all because of Brexit. Of course it's not. Our economic problems would be much, much worse, I would have thought. All right, The Express, it's a good paper. You can read your Express now. Feel free to read your Express now. Taxi for Starmer time, surely. They actually put a comma in it there. They don't usually bother with that, do they? Taxi for Starmer time. Surely. Olukemi Badenoch, the Nigerian woman that is somehow able to LARP as the leader of the opposition, has been attacking the PM for hiding, ahead of the local elections, going, quote, backwards on Brexit, quote. And she fully commits the Tories to pensions triple lock. Brilliant. Brilliant. You're going to keep gloating about all the foreign students you've got into this country, Kemi? Oh, you've given up on that one. Yeah, you're not doing that anymore. Olukemi Badenoch. Obvious example of a cuckoo in the nest. Go back to the land of your ancestors and be a politician in Nigeria. Disgusting. What a crazy thing that the Tories... Not that I'm a fan of Robert Jenrick, but they basically had a choice between Robert Jenrick and Olukemi Badenoch, and they went for her. That party deserves to be put in the dustbin of history. Absolute filth. All right, what have we got next? What is it? The Mail, absolute globalist slop. Trying to pretend it's not complete globalist slop. You remember the other day, I'll talk about quite often they'd put some sort of headline, some sort of thing that's just anti-family, anti-relationship, anti-children. Well, what's that one? That woman there, telling us she's totally gone off sex, so should I let my pilot husband have an affair? What? How is that? You're going to put that at the top of the front page. And nearly every day it's something like that. Wives, thinking about cheating on your husband, here's how you can do it. Wives, do you suspect your husband of cheating? Just leave him. On and on and on. Like that. Why I didn't have children and I'm happy about it in my 60s. Or something. It's so subversive, isn't it? So disgusting. All right, anyway, front page, what's it say? Harry, go to the other cam so I can read it. Day that will decide Starmer's fate and Britain's. I mean, it won't exactly decide Britain's fate, will it? Okay, I get it. They got Keir Starmer on the phone saying, think I'm bad? Wait till you get Andy or Ange. Good front page. The Daily Mail is so, people think, a lot of people in Britain think that the Daily Mail is in some way patriotic, right-leaning, conservative with a small c, those sorts of things. Not at all. Not at all. They're just as subversive and globalist and sloppy as all the others. The Mail Group. Who owns them? Right, The Sun. The Sun there. Sydney Sweeney and her boobs. How Sid boobs went out of fashion. They didn't. They haven't. They won't. The Sun. Boobs are out of fashion now. Are they? Anyway, they go with this, the cruise ship thing. Cruise Brits racked bug hell. All right. Just slop. Just absolute slop. All right. The mirror's getting more and more deranged. Lefty deranged. And this is exactly the sort of front page that the BBC can't put on its website. Right. The Mirror. Again, the Mirror's had a reputation over the years of being not exactly lefty. They would vacillate between being sort of, well, the people that own them tell them what their political views are going to be. Vacillate between being sort of pro-Blair, pro-conservative in the 80s, pro-conservative in the Cameron years, pro-Labour during the Blair. Okay, but now, it seems, they got the memo about going woke, being lefty. They hate Nige. They really hate Nige. Uni party, weak toast. Weak toast? Milk toast, weak sauce, Nige. They hate him. Look, there you go. A reformed Britain would cut care. I don't think so. Rip away our rights, doubt it, and send Bill soaring, not more than any other party. So we say to Farage and his mates, sorry, the Mirror, did we ask for your view? No, just report the news. So this is just the view of the people that write and edit the Mirror. They've decided they're the arbiters of what's right, what you should do with your vote. They say, just the Mirror say, no care, no clue, no thanks. All right, well, you say so, the Mirror. Aren't the Mirror more or less constantly embroiled in legal battles for being scum, for acting scummy? Filth. Disgusting. Sickening filth. Even Nigel Farage and reform is beyond the pale for them. Crazy. In Bose Britain, I'd probably unilaterally close the Mirror down. Just pass some sort of emergency law saying that there's seditious media organs in this country. Just close them down. Everyone in that building now hasn't got a job. We're closing the building. You're seditious filth. Yeah. So. All right, the Star. We're getting towards the bottom of the barrel now. The Star. Right, there's Kate Middleton looking radiant. They go with that ship again. Rat bug victims in UK. All right. Just filth. Just gross. Oh, one last one. I got the Swindon Advertiser. Oh, no, sorry. This show is about actual news and journalism, so there's no point talking about that. All right. Should we check in on the oil price? We do that, don't we, on the Bo Show every morning. Breakfast with Bo. The oil price, it's down. There we go. West Texas, $95 a barrel. Brent. Shade over $100 a barrel. There you go. It's down a bit. Still not astronomically higher than before the war with Iran started, but not cheap. Pretty volatile though. You know, look at that. Pretty volatile over the last month. That's a volatile graph there. The last three months, that is. Just speaks of volatility, doesn't it? All right, so the price is down a bit. Why might that be? Well, Trump's talking about making a deal. Actually, should we go to the US ones real quick? Because they've probably got... So Trump just keeps saying at the moment, over the last 24, 36 hours, just keeps saying, and Iran are sort of agreeing with it, we're close to making a deal. They keep talking about this one-page memorandum. That's the turn of phrase that keeps getting bandied around. There's a one-page memorandum which could end the war. Just end it. That was why he put Project Freedom on pause. Remember Project Freedom? Do you remember that? Like one day ago. 2 days ago. Do you remember back to the heady days of Project Freedom? When he was going to escort the thousands of ships that are trapped in the Persian Gulf. But he put that on pause because they were close to making a deal. Well, over the last 24 hours, there's been a that is volatile as well, isn't it? At one point, Trump on Truth Social was like, we're really close to making a deal. And then he's saying, oh, maybe not. We've got to the last minute before. And Iran have sort of reneged or backed away. So I'm not counting my chickens till they're hatched. And then, but the markets, both sort of equities markets, particularly in Asia and things, as well as the price of crude, have decided it's sort of good news on some level. Good news, everybody. Because the price of oil has gone down a bit. The price of equities has gone up a bit. You know, those traders, it is their job. It's literally their job, moment to moment, to sort of manage risk. It's the ultimate job of a trader, really, is that. They've decided, it seems, broadly, that it's good news that there may well be a deal struck at some point. Okay. And there you go. But it hasn't yet. It hasn't yet. I mean, I still see how it's difficult to see how they could, because the sticking point's probably the biggest sticking point, the main sticking point, isn't it? Is about whether Iran will truly abandon its ambitions to enrich uranium for itself. In fact, was that not what our poll was? We had a poll this morning, didn't we, Haz? Hair? We got one?
Yeah.
Cool. All right. What did we put? We did... Yeah. Can Iran abandon its nuclear ambitions? I deliberately asked for that. Not will it. Can it? We didn't give you a maybe. We gave you a binary yes or no. Can Iran abandon its nuclear ambitions? And the no's have it. Yeah, I suspect no. I would click no if I took that. 61% of you say no. 39% say yes. I mean, they might do. They might do, mightn't they? I don't know. I suspect not. I would have clicked no on that. Yeah, it's not will they, can they? Are they not just committed, like, politically? Ideologically, politically, ideologically, not religiously, ideologically. Can they? Are they not just... Are they just not sort of locked in on that? It's that or nothing. Give us a domestic uranium enrichment project or give us death, say the Iranian regime. So far, unless when we see this one-page memorandum, this is something different on that one-page memorandum, so far they've shown no signs of saying that. It's what always comes back to the sticking point. America tried to give them a number of ways to abandon it, and every time they're like, no, yes to everything, almost within reason, or yes to a lot of stuff, but on that, no. Maybe they'll change their mind, finally. I don't, you know. I feel it's unlikely. They would rather rule over a country of rubble with no economy. People starving to death and stuff. And no ability to actually enrich the uranium, because that gets blown up. But they've still, in theory, on paper, got, you know, retained the right to do it. Is that worth it? Is that worth it? Okay. All right. So the no's have it. There you go. All right, back to the news. What else have we got this morning? There's a few stories I thought were of interest. Oh, look, here's one at the BBC. Serving Met officer and four ex-officers investigated for handling of Al-Fayed allegations. Harry, do you know Mohammed Al-Fayed? Have you ever heard of him? Do you know who he is?
I don't know.
Okay, so I'll explain it for Zoomers or foreign people. This is an Egyptian sex criminal. He's dead now. He died of natural causes in like 2023 or something. He's very, very, very rich. Don't ask how he made his fortune. And he used to own Harrods. Very, very rich. His name's Mohammed. Was Mohammed. Mohammed Al-Fayed, friends with all sorts of politicians and rich people and stuff while he lived. It was just like a name of one of the super rich people in London. But his son, he had a son called Dodi Al-Fayed, who was in some sort of relationship with Princess Diana when they were both killed in a car crash in Paris that time. That was his son, Dodi Fayed. Anyway, Mohammed Al-Fayed, Harrods owner, ex-Harrods owner, turns out, a bit like Jimmy Savile, the moment he died, loads of allegations, even though everyone sort of, there was rumours, there was rumblings, for years, but he never got investigated or charged with anything. As soon as he died, suddenly the world seemed to wake up and realise he was like a serial sex criminal. At least 21 women came forward and said, yeah, he's sex assaults and full rapes and everything over years and years and years. You'd get pretty young women to work for Harrods and then he'd just groom them and or sexually assault them or whatever. Loads. 21, and you know that's only the 21 bravest of those women. There would have been many, many more, of course. So, there you go. And now they're saying that, and it's sort of definitely the case, it seems to be. It's not just sort of rumour. It sort of definitely was. Now even some police officers are in trouble historically for handling it, i.e., you know, read between the lines, basically. They knew, everyone knew, but he was a super rich dude who just, the police were just like, no, we're just not going to. No, he's rich, so he can get away with it. Effectively, something like that. He's powerful. He's powerful and rich, so. It's disgusting, isn't it? Mohammed Al-Fayed. Total wrong'un. All right. That everyone knew as well, like Jimmy Savile, sort of. People knew. Here's a little story I thought was quite interesting. If you've ever looked at a map of Korea, North and South Korea, North Korea has got a big border with China, hasn't it? But it's also got a tiny little border with Russia. It's a little bit of Russia that comes round in an arc, in a sort of claw around, and just a tiny bit of it just touches North Korea. On the map. But they built a bridge. Key bridge linking North Korea and Russia almost finished, satellite images show. BBC Verifier, the ultimate arbiter of truth, tells us. There you go. I just thought that was quite, it's reasonably interesting. I didn't even know they were building a bridge there. Because again, if anyone doesn't know, North Korea is famously sort of some sort of isolationist hermit. I nearly said kingdom then. It's not kingdom, is it? Sort of an isolationist, hermit, communist state. All the wranglings over the decades of any sort of to and fro with the South Koreans. You know, at various points, when it thaws out, North Korea will actually let South Korean businesses and people go just across the border. A performative thing. And then things get hotter, or colder rather, in their Cold War. And the North Koreans say, no, that one factory we allowed you to build half a mile across the border, even that's too much, go back, stop. And that vacillates. And as for stuff with China, well, if you're North Korean and you try and flee into China and you get caught, that's an executionable offence, or at least hard labour for a long, long time. North Koreans are basically prisoners in their own country. Anyway, so the idea that they're building a bridge, or have built a bridge, to Russia, is interesting in all sorts of ways, you know. Least of all, how is that really in Russia's interest, particularly? Anyway, maybe a slight sign that North Korea is opening up a little bit, even if it's only one bridge. I don't know. No one really knows, really. What goes on in the mind of that big fat psycho communist dude who runs their country. All right, I just thought it was a mildly interesting story. All right, what else have we got on the ITV news? There was one. Oh, look, CNN founder Ted Turner has died at aged 87. Well, I was always told, if you can't say anything nice, don't say anything at all. So, next. Here's a funny story. Interesting. I don't believe that, by the way. I'm very rude and dismissive to people, aren't I, all the time? Yeah, the axiom, if you can't say anything nice, don't say anything at all. Yeah, I don't live by that. Ted Turner was a complete douchebag. All right. Here's an interesting story. I thought it was a very interesting story on Sky News this morning. Very, very interesting story. It's all about oil. Oil makes the world go round, doesn't it? The headline is, an extraordinary watershed moment passed below the radar and helped make Trump's war possible. An energy boom is helping to power American aggression in Iran, but those hoping the US would come to the rescue as Europe and Asia face an energy shock might find themselves seriously disappointed. Anyway, it's quite a long article, and I read it this morning. I thought it was very, very interesting, made a number of interesting points and a couple of things I hadn't thought of before, I hadn't heard of before. The broadest points I was aware of, but a few of the details hadn't. So anyway, it's basically largely about fracking, hydraulic fracturing, you know, fracking. And it starts with saying, look, what's this? This is a bit of Texas. This is in West Texas. What is that? Harry, you might want to put the image up. There you go. Look, what's that? That's an aerial view of a little bit of West Texas. And into like New Mexico as well. A giant area. Giant area. What's all that going on? What was it? Oh, it's drilling and fracking to a massive extent. Look, there's a bit of a more close-up view where you can see, look, there's little, it's like the pump jacks, they call them, don't they? All over the place, stretching into the horizon, hundreds and hundreds of kilometers in every direction. You get natural gas and crude oil that way. It really isn't the same as sort of normal crude oil extraction. Now, like some places in the world, it's just crude oil is just literally bubbling out of the ground. That's what they say about Baku, or used to be the case. Baku in Azerbaijan. It's just bubbling out of the ground. You know, some places in Kuwait and Saudi, various places around the world, actually, some places in Canada, crude oil is just almost bubbling out of the ground. If it's not that, it's really close to the surface. Sometimes you have to drill deep, but there's just a reservoir of crude oil. All you need to do is pump it out. Well, that's not what fracking is. Fracking is something entirely different, isn't it? You have to like use drills all over the place, and you have to pump water in and get shale, and there's a whole process before you get the natural gas and the crude and all that sort of stuff, however, which makes it more expensive. But if you had an area of land that geologically is good for fracking, which West Texas is, and parts of New Mexico, and you decided to invest a crazy amount of money in getting it out, like the United States has for the last decade or more, then suddenly, kind of suddenly, it's not exactly suddenly, is it? But then you've got more oil and gas than you know what to do with, quite literally more than they know what to do with. Like the natural gas element of it, a lot of it, this article was saying, a lot of it, they're just burning off into the air because they can't get rid of it fast enough. Not funny really, but yeah, so all sorts of points of note in this article I thought were interesting. Look, that, just hundreds of square miles, one of those every few hundred yards or whatever. And that ever since the oil crisis of the 70s, I think I mentioned the oil crisis of the 70s in the Nixon years, didn't I, the other day? I mentioned it in passing anyway, where OPEC would just sort of decide they're going to reduce production just to play power games, just to screw with people, particularly the West, particularly the United States. Ever since then, ever since the 1970s, it's been sort of a fairly grand strategic aim of the United States to never let itself be in that situation again. Where OPEC, Saudi Arabia, can just hold them ransom, in a sense. But fracking, and America has got large, natural, massive, massive natural resources. I mean, it's a continent-sized country, isn't it? It's going to have. And Canada has as well. Canada sits on a crazy amount of oil. Anyway. Through the 80s and the 90s, fracking was a thing. I think like the technology, the concept has been around since the 40s or 50s. But it was just difficult, technically, physically, difficult, logistically. It was just too expensive, basically. The economy of it just didn't add up. You could sort of do it, but it was basic, and it was way more expensive than made it worthwhile. But then in the early 2000s, there were various breakthroughs in various things, least of all like drill bits, the actual drill that drills into the ground, and the ability to like drill at angles and horizontally, you know, things like that. I won't bore you with the details, but the point is it became economically viable if you did it on a large enough scale anyway. And so the United States did. Drill, baby, drill. Particularly under the first, I think it was ramped up, I think it was dialed up massively under the first Trump administration. And now, you know, like a decade later, now America produces more gas and oil than Saudi, more than its own domestic needs. It's a net exporter. Yeah, there's this place in West Texas, they call it the Permian Basin. That's interesting, like there's like the slightly interesting. The Permian period of ancient history, like truly prehistoric history. Like the Permian period was like pre-dinosaurs. Right? Like you've got the Permian Triassic mass extinction event. I wonder if it's named after that. It must be, mustn't it? Anyway, the Permian Basin in West Texas. Just a giant area as well, in like European terms, what we're used to. A giant, giant area. And they have drilled, baby, drilled. They have done it. And anyway, the other thing this article goes on to say is that loads of the world's oil and shipping companies, loads of them, are sending their ships, the ones that aren't trapped in the Persian Gulf, sending them to the Gulf of Mexico. Because most of all the gas and oil that comes from the Permian Basin finds its way out into the Persian Gulf, into like Houston or Corpus Christi and Houston. Not into the water. Onto ships, hopefully. So loads of the ships that would in the before times, before this war with Iran started, would have been heading to the Straits of Hormuz and the Persian Gulf. They're all just going to the Gulf of Mexico now. Apparently, according to this article. Just a giant armada from all places in the world just going there. Oh, we can't get oil from the Gulf. Where can we get it from? Not Venezuela, right? But the United States want to sell it to us. Want to. And we need to buy it. So all the ships go to the Gulf of Mexico now. Go to Corpus Christi and Houston. Pick it up. Interesting, isn't it? But one final element that this article was talking about I found that was interesting was it was saying that it might not necessarily be just as simple as all that and as easy as all that. That the United States or the powers that be in West Texas, for various reasons, might not want to dial up production. All the countries that want to buy a shed load of oil from Houston, they want more than the Americans are currently producing, even more than that, sort of an insatiable demand for it. So the Americans could just dial up their production, but for various reasons I won't bore you with, they don't really want to do that. So it might still be, despite everything, there will be some sorts of shortages. It might not. Anyway, I thought that was, because I'm interested in oil, the world of oil and energy. It's quite literally what makes the world go round, isn't it, these days? So I thought that was interesting. I thought that I'd bring that to you. All right, it's already 22. What else have we got? Oh, here's a story. Loads, the Mail particularly dunking on the Greens massively today. Look, Polanski says Palestine on the ballot as he returns to sectarian tactics in desperate bid to win over voters. Think things are bad now? Vote Green if you want to make it worse. Still thinking of voting Green for the Green Party today? Here is a list of their daft and dangerous policies. So, well, I'm not a fan of the Greens. However, they lead with this story, which is so retarded that it's funny to me. This idiot woman here, called Rosie something or other, wrote this article. And it's, roll your eyes all you like, but we're young, ambitious and proud to be voting Green today. Are you? Are you? Young and voting Green. And it's a piece all about how women, young women, are going to vote Green, regardless of, like, reality. look at the state of it. Do you have a quick read? It's so mad that it's funny to me. Rosie Beveridge, who's like 25, says, I was sitting on the sofa watching television with my father last week when the conversation turned to politics. I've been able to vote for the past 8 years and let slip that at today's elections I intended to vote Green. His reaction was far more vehement than expected. Why on earth would you do that? He said, aghast. Zach Polanski would be a complete and utter disaster. At first, I was shocked by the strength of his feelings, but then it struck me that he and I are an almost comical representation of a national political divide, or rather chasm, that splits down both generational and gender lines. Anyway, the article goes on to say that it's about hope. It's about a fairer society. Voting for the Greens is about, it's just about hope and, you know, a reduction in misogyny and having a fairer society. Not really much about environmentalism. Nothing at all about the dangers of open borders. I mean, it's mad. Like, she moans about how there's no prospects for her, a young woman, not enough jobs. But doesn't address the Greens' policies are to flood us with more and more people, making the job market much, much more difficult. Don't say anything about the tsunami of sex crimes and rapes at the hands of foreign invaders. Not a word about that. Not a word about Islam. Not a single word. Actually, I only scanned the last third of it. She might have done there, but I doubt it. All right, look at this. Look at these idiot children. Think they know what they're talking about. Look at the state of that. This is an 18-year-old. You think she knows about the world and what's going on. What's her name? Was it Sicily? Sicily. Anyone who might not know, American or something. That's a really, really middle-class name. Sicily. Doesn't know her arse from her elbow. 18-year-old, so technically an adult. But just a child, really. A know-nothing child. She thinks the Greens will bring in a more hopeful society. Madness, isn't it? Madness. Look at trying to be a girl boss. Look at the stance. Look at this, look. Oh, she knows what Britain needs. She's got a great vision, a great concept of history and stuff. Yeah, look at the state of that. What's her name? Hannah Rahman, 18. She's going to tell you about the Greens and what Britain needs. Hannah Rahman, 18-year-old. If you don't like the country, Ms. Rahman, feel free to go back to the land of your ancestors, actually. Rosie, the author of this. Look at the mad eyes. It always gives it away, doesn't it? The madness in the eyes. You can almost sort of see the insanity. Yeah, I mean, look, she says, For all the young women I spoke to, immigration was not a concern.
Oh.
All right. That's it. That's it as well. Just that. Immigration is not a concern. Huh. Okay. Of course, it is the number one thing that changes the very destiny of a nation. It's the number one thing, really, from which nearly all other policy is downstream from. Everything from the NHS to housing to schools, the economy, da da da. But no, immigration is not a concern. Oh, that's it. That's it. She's worried more, much more about misogyny and that the Greens will tackle that. No, they're importing misogynists. They would have open borders increasing misogyny, increasing, making it less safe for women. How do you not get it? How do you not understand, Rosie? What kind of mania are you suffering from? At one point she says, call me naive. No, I will. Yeah, I will call you naive. Catastrophically naive. Suicidally naive. You don't understand what's going on. Clearly, obviously you don't. What you're dealing with Zach Polanski and the Green Party. You're failing to understand. But look, she's got her hands on her hips there. She's serious. She's a serious person who writes for the Mail. Turkey's voting for Christmas. Insane. All right, let's see. What else have we got? The Express, something about Zach Polanski is humiliated as fresh questions over mystery living arrangements emerge. He had another pop at the cops as well. He doubled, tripled down on his criticism of the Golders Green cops that were trying to arrest a terrorist. He's on the side of the terrorist. David Paulden, is on the side of the terrorists. What'd you say to that, Rosie? Is that a more hopeful society? Is it? Crushing blow for Polanski as his approval ratings spiral out of control amid scandal. Should read scandals. Yeah, apparently his personal popularity rating. Sorry, just something in my throat there. Has gone down massively in the last week or two. Yeah, because most people don't have sympathy for terrorists. If there's a terrorist on the ground that's still holding a knife and refusing to let go of the knife, even if the taser's making his hand hold onto it, most people don't mind if the cop give him a little tap in the head. The vast majority of people. As well as everything else. Like he said, he was a Red Cross spokesman. He wasn't. He said he was a hypnotherapist. He wasn't. He's just a complete chancer, isn't he? He didn't say anything. The sort of person that would claim to live on a canal boat to avoid council tax. A revolting person. Nigel Farage effigy stabbed, strangled and hanged in sickening video. I didn't see that this morning. This is the first time I've seen that one. Okay, that's not completely unhinged. Sure. All right, look, The Sun. A lot of the papers going after the Greens. I'm here for it. But Corbyn in disguise. Polanski compared to Corbyn as he blasts cops again over Golders Green. Are you Corbyn being shorthand for pro-terrorist, basically. Anyone or anything that was at war or at odds with Britain or had their interests contrary to British interests, Jeremy Corbyn would be in favour for. Always, for decades. That's what Corbyn is. That's who Corbyn is. Has always been. Look, they're saying Zach Polanski is just the same. It's the same. And it is. Well, you've got a terrorist at large with a knife in his hand. Think about him. Think about his well-being. The Green Party is not about environmentalism, is it? It's about destroying the fabric of our society. It's about extreme left-wing politics and Islamism. Get a clue. Really, get a clue. All right, well, it's now about 10:02, so I should be off to Great Yarmouth later today. I'll be back for tomorrow morning. So I need to, would like to try and round the show out before not too much past 9. So let's just have a look at On This Day in History. You like that segment, don't you? I quite like doing that segment every day, five minutes. On this day, the 7th of May, down through the centuries, what happened of note? It's the 7th of May. In the year 1429, the English siege of Orléans broke by Jeanne d'Arc and the French army, or Joan of Arc and Orleans, if you prefer. Harry? Do you reckon, on my history-themed show, Epochs, Bodade's Epochs, behind the paywall on LotusEaters.com, consider joining for as little as £5 a month, volunteer membership. Do you think I've got long-form content talking about the Siege of Orléans and the career of Joan of Arc? Yeah, I have. In fact, it's one of the few things, Henry V, the age of Henry V, the campaigns of Henry V, Pompey the Great. There's a couple of things that I've returned to more than once. And anyway, Henry V is one of those. So I've got a whole episode just about Joan of Arc. But then I've got a long, really, really long series. I can't remember how long it was. 12, 13, 15 part series all about Henry V. Well, I go into Joan of Arc is just after Henry V, really. But I go into it again there. So if you want a few hours worth of me talking about Joan of Arc, least of all the Siege of Orléans, it's there. Consider signing up. Fascinating character, Joan of Arc. Sort of almost unbelievable. I'm not saying it didn't happen or anything. I believe the accounts, largely. Almost unbelievable. She's sort of, to begin with, an illiterate 17-year-old peasant girl. And she led men into battle, and they followed her. She would tell the King of France things and he would believe her. What sort of force of character, what sort of personality was that? Incredible. She thought she was being spoken to by angels, maybe even God. Was it St. Michael? Anyway, I believe she believed it. Was she clinically insane in some way? Don't know. Who knows? No way of knowing. Nonetheless, she personally led charges on English redoubts at Orléans. At 17, 18. Little slip of a girl. Crazy. Amazing. Amazing. Absolutely amazing person. In the end, we captured her and burnt her alive. Okay. On this day in 1867, Swedish chemist Alfred Nobel patents dynamite in England for and the first of three patents he receives for the explosive material. Alfred Nobel there. He was so sort of guilt-ridden by it, because of course it wasn't just used for mining, they started using it for warfare quite quickly. He was felt so bad about that he started the Peace Prize, the Nobel Peace Prize. Same person, Alfred Nobel. Because before that, they had sort of, they had nitroglycerin, an explosive, but that was like really volatile. If you accidentally dropped it, you get blown up. Dynamite's much, much more stable, isn't it? Anyway. Alfred Nobel, interesting person, interesting life. Very, very interesting. On this day, in 1812, Columbia University approves plans to award the Pulitzer Prize in several categories after establishment by Joseph Pulitzer. Yeah. Of course now, like nearly everything else, utterly, utterly woke. Can't dream of winning a Pulitzer Prize, really, unless you're like, they decide you're towing the line on sort of globalism and socialism and stuff. Pulitzer Prize. Like a lot of things, used to be of value, used to be good, used to mean something. Now, just a race to the bottom. Pulitzer Prize. Used to wear it as a badge of honour. Now it's, I would consider, an embarrassment, if anything. Okay, on this day in 1915, the Lusitania is sunk by a German submarine off the southern coast of Ireland with 1,198 lives lost. Yeah, people talk about the the Titanic as sort of a one time, all time greatest, most interesting ship sinkings. The Lusitania is one of those, absolutely. Oh, and it's the story about how a hero millionaire saves Lusitania children. Because not everyone died on it. A few hundred survived. I think there's closer to 2,000 people on board, so more than half of them did die. Really, the broader story is about unrestricted submarine warfare by the Germans in World War One. The Lusitania had come from, or was it going to, New York. So it involved the Americans as well, in a way. Well, it did, so. The Americans, of course, didn't come into the war, World War One, for another couple of years, but it turned public opinion in the United States much more anti-German. It was a big moment in history, the Lusitania. Look into it, if you're interested. On this day in 1945, the Germans' Third Reich Marshal, Jodl, Alfred Jodl, signs documents with his monocle there. That's why I think I might not wear a monocle. People say, my eyesight's going a bit. People say, wear a monocle, get a monocle. It's a bit Jodl. Okay, Jodl signs documents to surrender to the Allies at Rheims in France. The Soviet Union refuses to recognise it, though. Yeah, because VE Day is tomorrow, isn't it? It's the 8th of May, isn't it, VE Day? Surrendering in the West. Ever so slightly different to surrendering in the East. Was it Dönitz? Admiral Dönitz had to surrender to the Soviets to completely end the war in Europe, right? That's right, isn't it? Dönitz, yeah. Quite a funny sketch, actually. Mitchell and Webb. They're like, some political or military, it's a comedy sketch. Some military adjutants come to Dönitz and say, Admiral, the Führer is dead in his Führer bunker. You are the new leader of the Third Reich. And Dönitz's like, great, I've got great visions for like an education program, and I'm going to build greater roads than ever before. And I've got this whole program for government. Oh, wow, like history has chosen me to be a leader of men. Da, 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 da. And they're like, no, we just need you to sign the surrender document. We need someone to sign the surrender document. There you go. I thought it was quite a funny sketch. Okay, on this day in 1952, the concept of the integrated circuit, the basis for all modern computers, is first published by Jeffrey Dummer. There you go, I didn't know. I didn't know it was as early as that, 1952. There you go, interesting. And on this day in 2017, Emmanuel Macron wins France's presidential election, defeating Marine Le Pen. Marine Le Pen went on to have a little dance on the dance floor, if you remember that, pretending she's not absolutely gutted. Emmanuel Macron, how's that worked out for you, France? Great. Great. Enjoying all your Algerians, are you? And all the murders and rapes they do, are you? Well done. Well done. All right. Let's have a look at our Rumble Rants and Super Chats. Let's do that, Harry. All right, let me just do this with my mic boom so I can see the left-hand side of my screen properly. That does need a bit of WD-40, doesn't it? Seriously, actually, I have a word with Samson later. Get a bit of oil on that. Okay, there's no global church history. Are you all right, bro? I hope you're all right. It's not a global church history in at number one. Hashtag pray for global church history. He must be incapacitated. There's no other explanation. His internet's gone down. All right. Dragon Lady Chris says, on this day in history, oh, she's gone in with it. She probably saw that global church history is not here today. She'd pick up the reins. Thank you. Dragon Lady Chris. You say, on this day in history, you put, I, Queen of History Nerds, was born. Oh, right, okay. So it's your birthday. Oh, happy birthday. Happy birthday. A mob, you say, I, Queen of History Nerds, was born. A marvellous boon to America and indeed to the world at large. My birthday wish is to see Britain restored. Oh, thank you. What a lovely sentiment. Well, honestly, lovely sentiment. Thank you for that. And happy birthday. Many happy returns. And many more. All right. For Tea and Barber says, good morning, Bo. Morning, sir. To the people of Great Yarmouth, I just want to say good luck. We're all counting on you. I don't really have a doubt that we'll win. Hopefully your travels will be free of issue. Oh, thank you very much. Yeah, it's quite a long drive, actually, from the West Country all the way to the almost eastern extreme. Yeah, if you're living in Great Yarmouth, get out there and vote for Restore Britain. Please. Please do. You live in Great Yarmouth. Do it. You're doing it. Make it so. All right. Let's have a look at the YouTube Super Chats. Oh, what do you know? Global Church History there in at number one. He's switched. He always used to be YouTube. Then he switched to Rumble Rants. He's just back on YouTube. That's all it is. So he was still in at number one. The reigning, defending, undisputed champion. I'm glad you're all right. I was a bit worried about you there for a minute, mate. But you're all right. Good. Brilliant. You've said, and in at number one as well, bright and early. Gotta get up early in the morning to out super chat Global Church History. He says, today in 1104, Baldwin II was captured at Harran, making Tancred regent of Edessa. And you've got another one. But so Tancred, God, okay. Baldwin and Tancred, oh. Do you think I've got long-form content talking all about the First Crusade in loads and loads of detail? Do you reckon I've got that? Yeah, I have, yeah. Tancred, one of my all-time favourite First Crusaders was Tancred. He's just an absolute badass. One of those people in history that just goes around doing what he wants at all times. Like quite often, really insanely violent things, crazy things. For our world, you know, our morality. But you got to respect it. He's just going to say and do whatever he wants at all times. I love a bit of Tancred. It's so mad, it's funny, sort of thing. Okay, you also say, in 1487, the Battle of Malaga, the first to use ambulances began. I don't know that. What sort of campaign or war would that be? 1487 at Malaga. Perhaps I should know that, more about that. Off the top of my head, I don't. 1487 at Malaga. Oh, okay, cool. You've out history broed me there, bro. Cool, well done. Should know more about it. I might Google it in a minute. Okay. Christian 3698 doesn't say anything and just gives €4. Thank you, sir. Thank you very much. Appreciate that. Opening Doors 1 says, hi, Bo. Do you think Kim Jong-un likes pizza? Don't know exactly what that's in reference to. Are you just saying that he's fat? That he must like pizza because he's fat? I don't know. Is there a wider, broader reference there I don't know about? But he probably does. I think he likes his grub, doesn't he? He likes food. He's not skipping meals, is he? Plus, who doesn't like pizza, really? I love pizza. Something wrong with you if you don't, kind of. Okay. AC1D Helm says, my area has no good parties, just voting against SNP. Well, fair enough. Yeah, no, good, fine. Yeah, do that. If you're in Scotland then, Scottish National Party, I take it you're in Scotland. Anything but SNP. Yeah. And fair enough, fair tactic. Fair tactic. Good luck. The SNP are filth. It's weird that they've got the word nationalist in their name because they're not nationalists. Other than the fact that they want independence. Beyond that, they act against the interests of the nation of Scotland all the time. Don't they? They want to rejoin the EU. They want more and more refugees, specifically militant Gazan ones. Anything and everything. It's horrible. They're not nationalist beyond wanting independence. Beyond that, they're terrible. They're terrible. The SNP are filth. Real filth. Subversive traitors. Okay. Bill Wilson, 1225, says drainage. Just that. All capital letters, exclamation mark, drainage. Not sure quite what you're referring to there, Bill. Something about fracking. Quite often people will send in a super chat in response to something I'm saying, and then I don't read it out for like another 20 minutes, 40 minutes, and then I don't know, and you don't make it clear what you're referencing, and I don't know what you're referencing. Drainage. Drainage of the swamp? I don't know. Okay, but thank you anyway. Thank you anyway. All right, and the last one this morning, Brandon Warsfold says, Restore Brighton's branch meeting got pulled at the last minute by a traitorous venue host. Hold us in your prayers. Restore Brighton! Exclamation mark. Yeah, got to be careful about that. So sorry to hear that. That's a shame, isn't it? Really annoying. Yeah, you've got to be really careful about getting a venue that aren't just going to soil themselves at the first bit of pressure from crazy lefties. Easier said than done, though. I say, just do that. Just make sure you do that. Easier said than done. It's a shame. Hopefully you'll find, really, hopefully, fingers crossed, everything crossed, you'll find another venue, a better venue. All right. That's it. That's the show. It is now 5 minutes past nine in the AM, British summertime, on Thursday the 7th of May in the year of our Lord 2026. Thank you for joining me. You've been the glorious band, the chosen few. My band of brothers and sisters, thank you for joining me. Without you, it's not a thing. Try and make the best of the day ahead if you can. If you're in Great Yarmouth, get out there and vote for a Restore Britain councillor. If you're anywhere else, do consider voting if there's one in your area. It's not the entire country. So if not, failing all of that, you've got spare time, try and make the best of it. Carpe diem, seize the day. You'll never have this day again. The most valuable thing you will ever have is your time, and it's finite. Try and make it count. Okay then, until tomorrow morning, take care.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on two purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dick's.com/scorecardplus for details.